Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, and today we're going to talk about disrupting stereotypes in workplace communication. Our guest today is Susan Freeman. Susan is the CEO of Freeman Means Business. The mission of Freeman Means Business is to create equity in the workplace, and Susan's goal is to help women in business communicate effectively with the world and to help men communicate effectively with women in business. Susan has worked with some of the most prestigious law firms and financial services institutions in the world. She is the co-author of the book, The Ultimate Women Associates Law Firm Marketing Checklist, and she has been published in the California Lawyers Association and most recently for Legal Business World. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you, Guy. Thank you so much for having me. I have to tell you, it's a little, I have a shoe on that I don't normally have on because I'm usually the interviewer on my podcast. So it's interesting to be the interviewee, and I'm thrilled to be here. So thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here, and it is a pleasure to have you. So before we jump into the topic, why don't you give us a little bit of background on you and how you got to be where you are today? How did you get into this world of legal and financial services, and you know your strong support for women in business communications?
Sure, what a great question. So I grew up in Louisiana. I was born in New Orleans, and not that there's anything wrong with being there, but my whole goal was always to see the world, get out and experience the world, leave Louisiana, find out what the rest of the world had to offer. Well, I moved throughout Europe. I lived in Boston for 12 years, and it was in Boston where I found an industry I loved so much at a company that's so well known. So I worked for a very long time in Boston in the financial services industry, and I ended up closing out my career there at State Street Corporation, which is the world's largest custodian. That means they custody cash of institutional investors. You and I cannot go in there and open a checking account. They don't service retail investors. Only institutional investors. So like, for example, a university or a city or maybe Fidelity or what have you. And it was a very interesting time in my life because it was back in the 90s. And back then, women would mimic men in order to be successful. And a lot of studies show this. And it was very interesting that I lived it. And literally, you were not appreciated for the uniqueness that you bring to the table that we fight so hard for now, today. Being curious about the other or what's different versus trying to fit in or be the same. So I learned a lot in that experience. And after 9/11 and a personal divorce, I moved back to Louisiana, and then I got into the law firm setting. So thus began my work in legal marketing. I had gone from business development, a vice president, sales of technology in financial services, to a very lowly little marketing marcom person or marketing manager. And I say lowly because for me, it was so many rungs down the ladder. I climbed so hard, tried so hard, and made it to a place that I very well deserved. But when I moved back to Louisiana, there was nothing like that there. They didn't have the financial service institutions that we know of. And they certainly didn't have the consultative selling that I used to do within legal at the time. So I took a marcom position and worked my way up the ladder in legal. And in about, I guess, 18 years, I've been involved with legal. My master's, however, is in communications. So it's focused on communication theory. So that's where this comes into play. This business that I now own, I kind of incorporate all of my background and experience plus the comms theory into what I do today.
Awesome. And how long ago did you start Freeman Means Business?
So technically last July, but my business plan was, you know, my first steps were to raise my profile, build my reputation. I know a lot of people across the country and in the UK, mostly across the country. And so I wanted to let them know, hey, here's what I'm going to be doing. Here's what my focus will be. So I spent the first few or many months focusing on raising my profile and letting people know what this unique and different initiative that I'm embarking on was about and how it can help them and so forth before I ever even started the relationships that bring in business phase of it.
Got it. I love it. So why do men and women have such trouble communicating effectively in business from your perspective?
Well, I'll tell you, it is from my perspective, but it's also based heavily on the research of my personal shero, Dr. Deborah Tannen. She is a New York Times number one best-selling author. She's written maybe 9 or 10 books. She's also a professor of linguistics at Georgetown University. And I followed her work for years, and I use a lot of her work in my presentations today. I'm actually going to have her as a guest speaker, a keynote in San Francisco in December. If any of your listeners are interested, they should let me know if they would like to attend. I'll make sure to send them information. But her findings started with boys and girls on the playground, and she saw how they communicated for hierarchy. She saw how they communicated for social inclusion. And she followed boys and girls into men and women in the corporate setting. So she followed these patterns that she saw in how we communicate. And as you know, communication is more than just talking or writing. It's body language. It's other ritual communications like how you dress, you know, any kind of sign or message that you're sending is a communication. And she saw that women and men communicated differently on the playground as well as in the corporate setting. So boys were competing for status on the playground, and girls instead were, oh, join our group or come play with us. I mean, they were attempting social connections. Boys were, you know, sort of beating their chest and a little bravado there, some hierarchy going on. But girls were avoiding any kind of claims of bold leadership because they didn't want to, I don't know that this was conscious at a young age, but we certainly don't want to be seen as bossy. So we are very collaborative and communal. We include others, you know, again, come play with us is the perfect example. We would downplay knowledge and ability just so we were accepted. Everybody knows of Lucy in the Peanuts cartoons.
Right.
Yeah. So I have to tell you, I have a little bit of Lucy in me, and I'll say if that were a man or a male or a boy on the playground behaving that way, he would be seen as a leader. But often we see Lucy and we say, she's just bossy. And that's not fair. And we take those sorts of labels, if you will, into our corporate world and our setting. And you even see men your age using teasing to encourage opposition, whereas women aim for equity and equality, and they use empathy, trying to put themselves in other people's shoes. Men often avoid asking questions because they don't want to look ignorant or appear not to know. I know when I've trained maybe, I don't know, I guess about 1,600 lawyers now over my days. I know they don't like asking questions. They don't like to go into the client's office and ask questions about the client's business and industry or, you know, their strategic plan because they feel like it makes them look ignorant. When really clients love that, they want to be able to share, you know, what's most important to them and then frame the discussion on those findings afterward.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. As I always tell our clients, your clients only care about one thing and one thing only, themselves.
Giving them
an opportunity to talk about themselves is just a great way to, you know, enhance the relationship, but also to provide better service, right?
Absolutely. So I think client conversations are an excellent client service are the number one way to bring in new business. So when you're meeting with a client, you want to let them talk about what's important to them, and then you frame your narrative around how you can help them reach that goal. Don't go in there and talk about what a smart lawyer you are, or where you went to law school, or how many cases you won.
Yeah.
I know I'm preaching to the choir here.
Oh, no, I love it. The more people hear it, the better. So I appreciate that. Let me ask you a question. When it comes to asking for a raise, how much more likely are men than women to ask for a raise in your experience?
You know, had I not studied the data in what I do, I would have said men are much more likely to ask for a raise because we know the data shows that men will apply to a job that they're not 100% qualified for. Mm-hmm. Even if they're only 50 or 60%, they'll go ahead and apply for that job and say, no, I haven't done it, but I can do it, so I'm going to apply. Women will look at that and read the requirements and say, no, you know, I haven't done it, so I'm not going to apply. But this is sort of a trick question because the data shows that actually women do ask for raises and promotions. We just don't get them as often. Mm. Yeah. So a lot of people will say women don't speak up for themselves. It's not that we don't so much speak up for ourselves. It's that we're not heard. And I make this case in my presentation about muted group theory. So your listeners should Google that and check what muted group theory is, because I feel like women are making the case and they're just not being heard because they don't speak white male over 50. And there's a lot to be said about muted group theory and how we struggle, women and other minorities struggle to navigate the white man's world. And seriously, when you think about companies, law firms, engineering firms, any corporate setting, those organizations were built by white males. You know, they speak white male. That's not a bad thing. It just is what it is. Historically, that's the way it's been. So I'm out there trying to change not just how a woman communicates, but how the world listens, like receives her message.
I hear you. And in your experience, what does it mean when a woman suggests an idea in a meeting and it falls flat, and then a few minutes later, a man might suggest the same idea and they get an enthusiastic reaction? I mean, why is that happening and what can be done about it?
Oh my gosh. So I know everyone listening, men and women, and those who don't identify as either can relate to this. What does it mean? It means stolen idea. That's what we call it. It's called a stolen idea. And this has happened even when I give presentations, people come up to me after and women will say, this happens to me all the time. Is there a strategy to combat this? Frankly, what we don't realize is that compared to women, men talk more, they make more suggestions in meetings, they interrupt more, especially other women. So they don't interrupt men as much as they interrupt women, but they do tend to talk over women. They give less credit for women's ideas, and they feel, I don't know that this is conscious, so I'm not trying to slam the white males out there, but I do feel like they maybe well-intended and don't realize that they're cutting women off, and then someone else will state the same or similar idea that, say, Kathy did. What needs to happen is Kathy and her posse of men and women need to speak up and say, you know, I was interested to hear what Kathy was saying, and what you're saying sounds an awful lot like Kathy was saying. Could you please give Kathy an opportunity to finish what she was saying? Now, I'm no Kathy. I am still, again, a little bit of Lucy.
Right.
So I don't let them interrupt. I'm like, right. I'm sorry, I wasn't finished yet. I'm going to finish what I had to say. So that's a real thing. And I trained some women in tech as well. And I think they experience the stolen idea far more often and with ideas that are truly, like, these are big ideas in technology. It's a little different than, you know, you're in another industry or you're... But technology ideas that turn into multi-billion dollar platforms or solutions, and to think it was your idea, but you got no credit for it, that is a big deal. Very big deal.
Yep, it is a big deal. So I went to high school in North Miami Beach, and one of the people, actually my class president, was Sheryl Sandberg, who obviously wrote the book Lean In. What are your thoughts about that book? I mean, it was pretty controversial when it came out. You know, how much of what Sheryl wrote about do you identify with, and how much of what she wrote about goes into your work?
I love that you asked that. So I happen to be a Sheryl Sandberg fan. I live and work not far from where she lives and works, and I happen to be a global lean-in leader. So if that answers your question.
Oh, it does.
yeah. I think that she got a raw deal on some aspects, and that we need to stop. But, you know, look, you don't have to agree 100% with every other woman out there who's preaching what I'm preaching, et cetera. But you've got to start lifting women up and giving them their own voice, even if what they're saying doesn't align 100% with what you're saying. She's trying to change the world. I mean, that's pretty bold. Yeah. When a man says or does things the way that she says and does things, he's said to be confident in his abilities, but she's said to be self-promoting. So I want to stop that. I don't want to stop women from speaking up. Again, I have a little bit of Lucy in me, but I want to change the world and get the, you know, the receiver makes meaning of the message, regardless of the sender's intent. So I'm trying to change the world and get them to open their minds and be curious about what's different and not shut down that which doesn't sound like they do or look like they do or fit in, if you will. Yeah. So yeah, I'm a fan, and lucky you, huh?
Yeah, she's a great, I mean, she was phenomenal in high school, and obviously she's gone on to do great things. So yeah. It's definitely someone that I admire. Let me talk a little bit now about the topic of stereotypes. So we've talked about women issues. In law firms specifically, the term diversity and inclusion gets thrown out there a lot. But what is the difference? Is there a difference between diversity and inclusion? And in your experience, are law firms merely playing lip service to that, or are you really seeing some changes when it comes to law firms diversifying and including others that are not typically in leadership roles?
So what a loaded question. And I have so much to say about that, some of which is provocative and people are going to want to throw tomatoes at me. But good thing I'm on a webcast and not on a stage. I think that the last 5 to 10 years we've spent all this time, money, attention, and consideration on D&I, it has been lipstick on a pig. If you look at the results of the McKinsey and Lean In study called Women in the Workplace, it comes out every year. We have spent so much money and we've hired all these people and we've redone our websites and our brochures and even our pitch team is colorful. Oh, go grab a girl, or oh, here's a person of color. Let's put them in the proposal before we respond to the RFP. I have lived that. I have seen that and I have been the troublemaker who questions that. I am the person who will, at the highest levels, say, why? Why are you doing this when this person that you're putting in this proposal or this person who's now part of our landing page is not working on this case or is not making the money or isn't getting the stretch assignment or isn't getting paid like the men are? So I totally call BS on a lot of that. I think instead of a D&I initiative, what we need to focus on is an inclusion strategy. I know Verna Myers, she's the VP of Inclusion Strategy at Netflix. She likes to say, diversity is being invited to the party, but inclusion is getting asked to dance. And I think that's a great analogy.
I love it. I love it.
So one more thing I've noticed in law firms, just really quickly. I think that general public doesn't for sure, but I think even people in law firms, they don't understand the huge difference between diversity and inclusion. They're two totally different concepts. And Verna's analogy is a good one, and it kind of paints a picture. But just to speak directly to what they are, diversity concerns differences among employees in religion, ethnicity, gender, even physical ability, nationality, and age. But inclusion means valuing the differences. So that's why I love Verna's analogy, because, yeah, we all get invited to the party. We're on the brochures. We're on the websites. I mean, but when clients would call the firm and pull back the curtain and say, well, who's doing the work? Who's getting paid? How much? Is that the relationship attorney, or did you just parade him or her around on the pitch?
So, I love it. No, yeah. I think that's great. I totally agree with that. So, going a little bit back to where we started, from your perspective, what can law firms and other organizations do to combat bias? I mean, what can you do if you're the leader of a law firm, or even if you're, you know, the CMO of a firm? What can you do to combat bias?
Well, I have to say that as well-intentioned as so many managing partners, executive directors, you know, C-suite folks in the law firm setting and in other companies, they honestly don't know what they don't know. So step one would be, you know, raising awareness. And that's part of what I do when I travel and speak, is to raise awareness, open some eyes. Men and women in the room and those, again, who don't identify, see a lot of themselves in what I'm talking about. But I have to remind them to step out of yourself and see from another person's point of view. Get out of your bubble. I mean, for example, women remain underrepresented at every level in corporate America, despite earning more college degrees than men, even for the last 30 plus years. This is really, you know, a bad thing. This is a sign that change must happen. So yeah. I try to raise awareness, but then I provide some strategic tactics and some strategies and some actual action items, steps that people can take. And among those would be setting up a clear criteria in advance for evaluating people. And why do I say that? Because in the double bind, we might look at a performance evaluation. And if we don't know the gender of the person being evaluated and the outcomes are same or similar, both people are slated for a pay raise or a good job or, you know, kudos. But when the names are revealed and we see that one is a woman and one is a man, and again, the outcomes are same or similar, he always gets better rewards than she or more recognition than she. So you've got to set up clear criteria in advance and even maybe not even have the name of the person on the evaluation form. Scrutinize the criteria that you're using. You know, are the things that you're evaluating this person on driving performance? Are they growing and protecting the firm? Or are these things that are not important and you're just judging based on gender? So think about that. And looking at your evaluations, you know, think about, is this factor important to growing and protecting the firm? How will this help the firm? Things like what I just said earlier, I'm the troublemaker. I don't break the rules, but I do make trouble. Holding decision makers accountable for these decisions and having them explain why they made the decision or came to that conclusion. Now, I'm the why person. You can ask me why any day, all day long. I'm open, honest, and direct, and I don't expect everyone to always agree. But when you're in a position and you're answering to those who are, you know, much higher in you, you know, in pay grade and title and such, it's hard to ask why. Yeah. But those people in power have to allow others to question them and to ask why. Because we learn from that, we might have better alternatives. We might realize, oh, well, now that I know why you're doing this, I think this other approach might be better. So I think that, you know, people in positions of power have to be open to being asked why.
I've gotten myself in trouble many times asking why, but I agree with you. It has to be asked.
I love it. So I have a couple more action items, but before I speak to those, I want to say there's a book recommendation I'll present to you and your audience.
Great.
It's called In Defense of Troublemakers. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the PhD who wrote it, but it's a great book. It's called In Defense of Troublemakers. Of course, she's a professor at UC Berkeley out here where we like to make trouble. Known for troublemaking.
I love it. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, do. It's really great. A couple of other action items would be increased transparency. So let the women and other minorities at your firm or company know how many women are or minorities are in power or at various levels, what their titles are, to give you hope and know that this is a place that allows for that or encourages it or makes it happen. Host workshops. Now, that's a little personal plug because this is what I do for a living. Host workshops with employees at all levels to educate and encourage inclusion, not just diversity. We have diversity all over the place, and we brag about it, but it's not meaningful. We need inclusion.
I love it. Well, listen, Susan, I could listen to you all day. It's really fascinating. No, I mean it. It's really fascinating, and I'm definitely going to check out some of the books that you published. We have, unfortunately, run out of time, but before I let you go, could you provide our audience with, you know, one word of advice, one tip, or one takeaway that they can use when they get back to their desks?
Yeah, sure. So I know that we've all heard people say, she doesn't fit in. And I will question and challenge, well, she checks off every box on the requirements for the job. Other people liked her. They enjoyed spending time with her. What does fit in mean? Mm. We need to start to be, instead of tolerating differences, which I think is a total insult, we need to start to embrace differences. And I think the key, the answer, the one word takeaway or whatever, you know, the magic bullet would be curiosity. So engage in curiosity. And instead of giving women or African Americans, Hispanics, and other minorities a chance, instead, you know, embrace them. Don't just give them a chance or try it out or tolerate. Embrace them and learn from them and have people who are different from one another work together. One word of caution before we go is affinity groups. We love to brag about our affinity groups. Be careful that we're not just creating a bigger, better bubble.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure, and maybe we'll invite you back to continue the conversation. For our listeners, thank you again for listening today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you want to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes, go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. And you can subscribe there. You can also check out some of our great past episodes. Susan, thank you again. And everyone online, thank you. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you, too.